This is Strange Harbor.
4,500 years, 2,500 BC. It's called it's BA 243. It's in a museum in Berlin. It's well dated. Called the Granting of the Plow. But this is what makes this special right here. Solar system, right? Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, in their relative sizes, mind you. Earth, Moon, Mars, and then, what should be here? This should be the asteroid belt. This is Nibiru, folks. Nibiru. Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto as a moon of Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. Notice that it's only a little bit bigger than Uranus, Neptune. It's about three times bigger than Earth. Did it occur to any of you that we were looking at a cylinder seal carved 4,500 years ago that had Uranus in it that we only discovered in 1781 when our telescopes got good enough to see it? It had Neptune when we discovered in 1846 when our telescopes got good enough to see it, and Pluto, which we discovered in 1930 when our mathematicians got good enough to tell our astronomers where to look for the thing, because it was so small. What are the Sumerians doing knowing about that? Furthermore, what are they doing writing in one of their tablets that if you look at these two, Uranus and Neptune, in the heavens, meaning right out on them, they look like blue-green watery twins? When we didn't find that out, we thought they were just big old gas bags like Jupiter and Saturn until Voyager went out there in 86 and 89 and found that, lo and behold, they really are blue-green watery twins. What the Sumerians said 4,500 years ago. Furthermore, they didn't count the way we do. Earth was not the third rock from the sun for them. It was number seven. So that means they were counting from out here and they were putting Pluto in its correct place. What are they doing with all that knowledge? Well, they make no bones about it. They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru. The people living on Nibiru came to Earth and gave us everything that we have, everything that we know, our great culture. What's the proof of that? Is there any proof that any ancient advanced civilization was ever on Earth at any point in the dim or distant past? Yes, yes, the megalithic structures out there, the pyramids, Tiwanaku, Baalbek, Teotihuacan, Stonehenge, you name it, a couple of dozen of them. All of those are impossible for human beings to recreate today. And yet we are told in another one of these great fantasies that they were somehow created by people in ancient times, ancient Egyptians or ancient Sumerians or anybody. And it's just absolute malarkey, impossible.
Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unspectacular, and the unabiding.
You're getting fancy there, Bill.
Yeah.
Johnny and Billy here, and we have a guest in the studio, Mr. Mick Jones, Strange Harbor listener. Thank you very much, sir. And former Air Force. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Mick Jones. Lived on the harbor all my adult life. A lot of people out there probably know the name, been involved in a lot of stuff. But I'm here to talk about the moon experiments that took place in the past that I was a part of, and some interesting facts.
So you heard our show last week about the moon.
Yes, that was a great segue into this. I loved it.
So what do you know about the moon?
What I experienced with the moon was a project that I got involved in back in the 60s when I was a young airman in the Air Force. Why I got involved, I don't know. It was a random pick, I guess. But little history before we get into the little history there. Years ago, before there were spy satellites and GPS satellites and everything else, there was a string of radar sites. And these are very large installations. And they watched...
He's showing me a picture here of one of the radar sites. And it's in a snowy area. There's a bunch of big balls on top of buildings and a whole bunch of outbuildings. And
the reason I brought this in was because this is already on the websites.
Uh-huh.
This is already out there.
Okay.
Okay, but I thought to show the fact that I know what I'm talking about, I'd like to show you the original.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So I brought in the original.
Wow.
You'll find this on the Air Force Museum pictures. You'll find this everywhere. And this hung on my office wall at the radar site that it depicts here, Sundance, Wyoming, the one I'd like to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Sundance. And what you'll see here, Johnny, if you look right there in the corner, you'll see a complex of pipes and stuff. They haven't built a building over it yet. That's the nuclear reactor being built.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, Sundance, Wyoming was part of the Dew Line, which was, like I was going to say, the string of radar sites across the top of North America and the top of the United States that literally watched for the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did for a living. We watched for the Russians and anything else that was out there. We'll get into that in a bit, maybe.
Can you tell us what the Dew Line is?
The Dew Line, that was Defense and Early Warning Line. The Dew Line was a set of radar sites about 500-600 miles apart. Started in Shimmy, Alaska, out at the end of the Aleutian Islands. The next one, I believe, was in Anchorage. The next one was over in the Yukon by the Canadians. The next one was over in Hudson's Bay by the Canadians, a place called Cold Spot. And then we had Thule, Greenland. We had Argentia, Newfoundland Air Force, or Navy Base, in Newfoundland, Canada. We stretched the Iceland, the British and the Danish did the one in Iceland, and then it stretched into England and Europe. And we even had a site, I say we, the U.S. Air Force and the Army, had a site in Diyarbakir, Turkey, we looked right up the back door of the Russians. The sites were there for that kind of surveillance. And then this site, Sundance, Wyoming, was the only nuclear-powered radar site in the military inventory. And what's the best way to hide a big secret?
Right out in the open.
Right out in the open. You got it. That site was built. Everybody was told about it. The little town of Sundance, Wyoming, with the county of about 900 people, they all knew about it.
Hmm.
Everybody knew it was a nuclear-powered radar site. Everybody knew that it was built so the Air Force could test to build sites in hazardous conditions.
Hmm.
And that's where it stopped. Now, let the public decide what the hazardous conditions. Most everybody that was there and in town was convinced it was being tested so we could build a site in the Antarctic, because that was where our blind eye was at. If the Russians ever came around the other way, we didn't have a good eyeball on it. Like I say, this is all before satellites. My story begins. This site was built. The construction was started in 59. The construction was stopped until the nuclear power plant could be trucked in and built, and it didn't come online until 62, and it went offline in 68. So 6 years, they sat there and experimented with various things at this radar site. My involvement came when I joined the Air Force after high school in 1965. Just a kid out of high school, no big brilliant, you know, I could pull a solid B on my report card to keep the folks happy, and when my stepfather got on to me about my grades in math, like popping an A every once in a while and go back to solid B, you know, I had other things. I was one of those kids that was in and out of everything, you know. I joined the Air Force, and I get sent to tech school. After basic training, I get sent to tech school, and I get sent to tech school. And after 44 weeks of tech school, all my classmates who I'd been going to school with, they all got orders to go to radar sites or wherever, and I didn't. That's what I said. I didn't get any orders. So I'm sitting around the barracks waiting on orders, and the squadron says, you have to go over. The radio maintenance school is finishing up. They're in their hands-on phase. You have to go attend the hands-on phase at the radio school. Well, I'm in radar. What do I need to worry about radio for? But I did, being told, I'm 19 years old, two-striper. You know, you don't argue with anybody. So I went to school for 2 weeks and had hands-on on the big ground-air transmit-receive radios called the Gators. And, okay, that's fine. Finished that 2 weeks up. And I'm sitting around the barracks again, hoping I get some orders somewhere. I mean, I'm bugging everybody. I want out of Mississippi. I was going to school in Mississippi. I've been there too long. Again, go over to Hangar So-and-So and meet Mr. So-and-So. Now, for the love of anything, I can't remember this man's name, but in my mind, for some reason, I want to call him Mr. Rose. But have you ever met those people that when they put on a suit, they sit down and it doesn't wrinkle? They take off their suit coat and their shirt isn't wrinkled?
Oh,
and their tie isn't wrinkled?
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones who write at the blackboard teaching you binary mathematics, you know, he doesn't get chalk on his fingers?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I remember this gentleman.
Yeah.
I just that kind of person. And that's what he taught me. For the first few days, I'd never heard of this binary mathematics and number placement system. And after a few days, I knew that 1 and 1 is 3. It is.
Yeah.
And I could do it. And then he takes me over to another portion of the hangar, and there's a computer. Now, in those days, those were great big refrigerator-sized cabinets with a lot of electron tubes in them.
Mm-hmm.
And today's standard about all that thing was a modem.
Yeah.
But it was this, the art of the day. So he doesn't teach me how to run the computer. He teaches me a whole bunch of tricks about how this thing is got flukes to it. If you want to test this, here, copy this tape. And you punch little holes in the tape, and you run it through the tape reader, and the tubes light up, and okay, that system's good. So that's what I did. So now I'm waiting. Now what? And like I said, I'm just a 19-year-old kid out of high school. I want to go someplace. It's getting to be July. I want to go someplace. Then they send me over to the hospital, and I meet with this nurse who's a major, and she sits at the desk. Now, I can't remember everything she asked me, but I do remember it was one of the silliest interviews I ever had. Asked me all kinds of silly questions, and then I left. And a couple of days later, I get my orders. Going to Sundance Air Force Station, 731st Radar Squadron, Sundance, Wyoming.
Isn't that near Devil's Tower?
15 miles southeast.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's getting there. I got a story about... Anyway, we'll get the facts out first, then we'll play conspiracy. Maybe.
Yes, sir.
So when I get to Sundance, after about 30 days leave, when I finally get to Sundance, I'm told, I'm given orders, you're familiar with MOSs in the Army,
right,
and AFS.
Yeah.
Well, the Air Force are called AFSCs, Air Force Specialty Code. Tells you what your job is. Tells everybody in the world what your specialty is. On the end of mine, they put a letter. They put a Y. I was a 30352Y. Everybody else in the world was a 3032, a 30352, depending on your experience mm-hmm. level. I had a Y at the end of my name, or at the end of my job. The commander, when I first met him, the nice lieutenant colonel, who walks around his office in bedroom slippers, we're kind of relaxed. I found out we're kind of lax in Wyoming after I got there a while. But anyway, he informs me that I'm the special duties technician. I'll work the radios, I'll work the radar, I'll work the computers. The only place I won't work is the reactor. That's what I said. Again, so that's what I did for a year there. It got to the point where, being a bachelor and everything, that the married guys at the site, they knew that I couldn't leave the site. The rules were that he laid down, the commander, after a while, was I can't leave the site until every section person reports for work in the morning, because they had me mostly on the night shift. So if the radio guys missed the bus up the hill or the computer guy didn't show up, I had to stay put until they could find him or find out where it was. Now, how did this all get into the moon? Well, being a kind of a interested in a lot of things, it was recommended to me to read the book The Day After Roswell. Have you ever heard that one?
Heard that one, no.
Well, it's by Army Colonel Philip Corso, published in 1997. He's deceased now. But the reviews say that this guy couldn't have done everything he did back in the 50s and the 60s. I mean, one man to know this many people in Washington, D.C., and be in research and development, and claim that some of the stuff that they picked up at the Roswell crash worked its way into the military contracting environment and all that. And I was reading this book, and I was kind of going along with that train of thought. This guy's stretching some of this stuff. This colonel, he's, okay, yeah, sure, fine. Until I get to the part where he starts talking about moon projects, Project Horizon and Project Lunix. And he specifically names that the Air Force and the Army had a nuclear-powered radar site under test for a proposed moon base.
Wow.
All of a sudden, it made sense. And in the Air Force, you read Project Lunix, it says that in order to accomplish this, maintenance must be at the highest maintenance must be performed at the lowest level. So that means they used me to, I think...
19-year-old kid.
Yeah. See how much we can cram in this kid's head and see how well he performs afterwards. Because when they closed the site, I had already been transferred to Panama City, Florida, down to a radar site that had over-the-horizon capabilities. We watched everything that came off the ground from anything in the Gulf of Mexico, really.
Yeah.
We watched. The only reason we had to cut it off is because of the curvature of the Earth. I had about 6-7 months left to go in the Air Force. I was happy in Florida, newly married. One day I was working a night shift, and the radio and telecommunications operator guy came over and knocked on my door. I was down there doing reports in my office, and he says, "I don't know who you know at the headquarters of the U.S. Air Force Pentagon, but would you please introduce me?" And I says, "Why?" He says, "A message just came through with your name on it. You're discharged."
Oh, my.
It's kind of like they gave me, "Gee, thanks for your service, go home," message.
Wow.
6 months early. No questions asked. I was done.
Wow.
So that was that. That was it. But I did run into this Mr. Rose twice after I was once in Sundance. He was coming out of the orderly room building, and I was walking by because that's where the mailboxes for all of us were, was in the orderly room building. And he didn't even acknowledge me, yet I'd spent a week and a half with him. And then the next time I ran into him was at the air base in Panama City, Florida. He was coming out of an office, and I was walking down the hall, and I spoke to the gentleman, and he looked at me and just kept right on walking.
Wow.
Never acknowledged me. So I don't know if he had so much stuff on his mind that, you know, what's he going to remember, one 19, 20-year-old sergeant, you know, that does that. So it's rather strange.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
I got the feeling that they were using Sundance because it was up, tested, and down 6 years. That's it.
Wow.
We could turn our radar off. We were only having a scan of 300 miles. We could turn our radar off, and Great Falls, Montana up north covered everything we covered, and Minot, North Dakota covered everything we covered, and Sioux City, Iowa covered everything we covered in that direction. Or they could care less whether we were online or not after a while, I learned. So, I mean, because everybody else used to get panic phone calls when something would crash or break or go offline.
Mm-hmm.
Not us.
So your site was basically just an experimental site for...
That's what we're thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
For a possible moon base.
Because we were 6,500 feet in the air, sitting on the mountaintops. We were, if you look at the map, the geo maps, we're the last little piece of mountains before you hit South Dakota. And I could stand up here in this tower, the one in the east end, and I could look out with a pair of binoculars, and I could look all the way across South Dakota. I mean, that's how high up we were.
Yeah.
And this picture... is a summer picture.
Oh, with all the snow, yeah.
Yes, that's what this. That's just.
That's the summer snow.
That's the summer snow.
The summer snow.
Summer snow.
Yeah. I've been to those places in Wyoming. So was that the end of your Air Force career?
That was the end of my Air Force career. I came back a couple of years later. I got interested in the reserves, and I transferred to the reserves. And
yeah.
Vietnam was going hot and heavy, and the Air Force, you know, the military reserve works on a slot system.
Yeah.
Okay, you got a slot for a sergeant, you got a slot for a master sergeant, you got a slot for a private, and everybody stays there until somebody moves on and everybody moves up space or gets promoted or whatever. Or you go and find a new home where there's a slot available. And I had decided that I had spent so much time in the reserves and so much time in the military that I might as well just stay with the reserves, but I need to get some rank. So I transferred to the Army Reserve. At that point. And then I took the opportunities of education, and I accepted a commission in 76. So I retired as a major from the Army Reserve.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took advantage of the stuff. But now, do you want to get into the conspiracy stuff?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, if you do, hey, you're the guest. Hey, whatever you want to do.
Conspiracy stuff, okay. Have you ever had your mind read and know it?
Probably, yeah.
With me, when your mind is read, it's like somebody interrupted the tape that you're thinking about. And I've had it happen several times. First notable time it happened to me is when the man told me never to lie. And it happened at a carnival in Staunton, Virginia, when I was about 14 years old. And it's one of those old-fashioned carnivals that, you know, the mind reader, the tarot card readers, and the two-headed calf, you know, not the commercial ones that everybody goes to today, but the real old-fashioned carnivals and fairs. And there was a mind reader there, and being, you know, a 14-year-old kid and his buddies, you know, let's go see if the mind reader can really read minds, you know. So
yeah.
We did. And the mind reader picked me out of the group. I'll read your mind. Okay. Think of what your father does for a living. Well, my father was a Navy recruiter in town, but he was also a mechanic. So what I'm thinking is, am I thinking Navy recruiter or do I think mechanic? Navy recruiter, mechanic. I'll do mechanic. That'll fool him. And the guy turns to me and he says, make up your mind. Is he a Navy recruiter or a mechanic?
Wow.
So I've had a few of those experiences. Now, 1964, the summer between my junior and my senior in high school, we're living in Virginia. My stepfather's got about his last 6 month tour of duty on a ship going out in the Atlantic. He's going to be gone for 6 months in the summer. My mom's thinking this is going to be the last time I'm going to have a vacation with all the kids, including the oldest one, you know, who's going to go off wherever after high school. She hadn't been out to Port Angeles Squim area to see her folks for a few years, so off we go. And I had just gotten my learner's permit, so I was allowed to drive the Eisenhower interstate system pieces that were built at the time. You know, back in 64, it was piecemeal. I mean,
right.
Little piecemeal pieces as states finished it up. So we stopped in Sundance, Wyoming, after doing the day at the Black Hills and everything and the Mount Rushmore. My mom wants to make some time. So I get to drive that one section of I-90 from the South Dakota border to the middle of Wyoming. Boy, I'm excited. So we're gassing up the car at the gas station. And way up in the hills, I see this illuminated area. Bright lights up there. And I asked the man who was pumping the gas, I says, "What's that?" And he looked up and he says, "Oh, it must be the Air Force station. The Air Force has got an Air Force site up there." He says, "But boy, I've never seen it lit up before." He says, "That's strange." And I says, "Yeah, that's great. I wonder what it's all about." And he says to me, "Well, you'll know in a couple of years when you're working up there." I looked at him and I said, "What?" He said, "What?" I said, "Why'd you say that?" "Say what?" "Then I'll be working up there." Well, I didn't say nothing.
Wow.
So now let's go back to when I got my orders. I opened that envelope in front of the personnel sergeant, and I read that, and I almost fainted. Because he looked at me, and he says, "You know where that's at?" I says, "I sure do." "I know exactly where that's at."
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's strange things in the world sometimes.
Well, there are.
You don't really know. Like, first day's boot camp, right? Everybody's a rainbow in boot camp. No uniforms, no nothing. First day off the bus.
Yep.
You know, first day off the bus. Everybody's trying to find the footmarks in the pavement. Find the footmarks. Find the footmarks. Drill sergeant's lining everybody up by size and everything else. And I don't know. I was paying attention to what the drill sergeant over here was yelling at something else. Pretty soon there's another drill sergeant. You know, that, oh, there's two. There's two of these guys, you know. And he yells at me, "Oh, why did you join the U.S. Air Force?" And I blurted out, "Because a girl told me to."
You know, how about that one over there?
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly what happened. I was standing in the hallway back at high school one day, and it was getting close to graduation, and you know how you, what am I going to do with myself? I'm 17. I'm too young for a job. Nobody's going to hire, you know, not until later in the summer when I turn 18. I can't sit around the house. Folks aren't going to put up with that. I got to do something. And this stream of hundreds of students changing class, this girl steps out of the stream and she says, "They're waiting for you in the gym. You need to join the Air Force." And she steps back in the crowd, and I didn't know that girl. So the big joke from then on with the sergeants was, "Call out the recruiting. We don't need to spend all that money recruiting. Just have these young girls tell these boys to join the Air Force." So that I call those, I don't know what else to call them. I guess I call them guardian angel moments or angel moments. You know, you get some guidance from something that you didn't ever expect.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, more with Mick Jones, former Air Force.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and our guest Mick Jones, former Air Force. Am I saying that right? Former Air Force. Do I say anything after that? I'm not...
No, that's fine.
Former Air Force guy.
Former Air Force
guy.
Former airman.
Where were we?
Oh, we were going to get into the conspiracy stuff now.
Yeah, let's hear about
that. Let's
get
into the weird, because we did have did have a strange incident happen there. 1967, if you're part of the UFO community and if you're UFO thing and everything else, 67 was a really strange year and a lot of sightings and everything that they have been. One of the famous ones was in March of 67 when the air base up at Great Falls, Montana, where the missiles went offline, our nuclears went offline, and the reports of the UFOs or the lights in the sky by the air police and everything else was taking place. I'm not going to say that I saw any of that on the radar screen because I wasn't in the operations shack that often unless there was a maintenance problem.
Yeah.
All I could go by was what the guys that worked in there were saying, and they were saying that, boy, that there was things lit up sometimes like you wouldn't believe. But there was kind of an unwritten rule that you didn't talk about things too much. I had just made sergeant. I was 20 years old. I had just made sergeant. And I know this was in October, early October of 67, because I had just put that stripe on, and I had the nickname Babyface Sergeant. Oh, I mean, there were guys, they caused some problems that, you know, here's this guy running around, we got to call him Sergeant, you know, and we got shoes older than him. So I'm working the night shift, like I said, and usually at nights there was a couple of guys in the operations room watching the scopes. There was one or two guys in the computer room. We didn't have anybody over at the radio site because we didn't really have to have anybody over there at night. There was myself and another maintenance airman, and there was an Army sentry down at the gate because it was the Army was there for provide support to the Air Force site. And out of the 30 or so guys that were there, we all pretty much knew each other. In fact, 10 or 12 of them were from Washington State. And, in fact, our commander was from Montesino.
Wow.
But I'm not going to say his name because he has family here. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so everybody got along. Everybody knew everybody and everything. So I get a call. It's dark. I get a call from the boys in the computer room. And there's two young airmen down there right out of school. They're trying their best. But, you know, that's why they're on night shift. Their sergeant can hide them on night shift, you know. I go down to the computer room, and it's offline. And that's our link from the radar to the SAGE network for NORAD. And the phone starts ringing off the hook, and these poor gentlemen are just up against themselves. And what had happened is the main power board had tripped its main circuit breaker. They kept trying to just reset it. So I had to have them go around and turn off all the cabinets. Everything gets turned off, and then we go back to the turn-on procedure, and here's your book. Let me know if it doesn't work. By the time I come out of that computer room door over into the operations door, the operations sergeant comes out, and he's talking about humongous amounts of ground clutter. And there was a feature on the radar where the operator could turn off stationary targets, like the Grand Tetons that are 13,000 feet high that were 300 and some miles to the west of us. We don't need to look at the Grand Tetons every time the radar comes around.
Right.
So it's called the blanking feature, and they turn it off. And it was on a timer, and every once in a while it'd pop back, and you'd have to turn it off. You know, so something can't sneak in on you, but it's off for quite a few rotations. And another thing that would cause a lot of ground clutter is snow and ice would build up on these radomes and bounce the signal almost immediately right back into your radar. So you'd have to go up and knock the ice off, you know. And I'm thinking, there's no ice on these towers. It's just a wispy little snow thing out there, and we haven't had snow in a long time. But I went and looked to make him happy. I went in and looked at the operations. I turned it on and off. I didn't see any unusual amounts of ground clutter, little weather front here and there, but nothing serious. Well, it's gone now, he says. Okay. Fine. So I left, went back to my tower, which is the one on the farthest east of the site where I hung out, and I smoked cigarettes in those days, like most GIs.
Yeah.
And I'm standing at the window looking more or less to the north. I can't see the lights on the antennas for the ground approach transmit receive radio site, which is about a mile and a quarter farther up the ridge. And I'm thinking to myself, where did the lights go? There's supposed to be warning lights on the top of those towers. There's 11 towers over there. Some of them got lights on them. And where's the security light for the shed? There's a building over there about the size of a big Connex container that sat on a concrete slab over there and had a fence around it. And I'm going, I can't see anything. So I went back down and went into operations. I says, are the radios working? Well, yeah, we got communication with everybody. I says, well, the lights are out. Well, the sergeant in the operations and I agreed that must have lost the power to the lights over at the radio site. You can't leave the lights off because if somebody comes flying by crash.
Mm-hmm.
You get the picture. So I go down and I see that the sentry, the Army sentry, this guy about my age, and he's locking up the gates. And I went, don't lock up the gates too much. You get to drive me over to the radio site. Oh, great. Well, I kind of like to take the Army guy with me because up in that country there was bear and deer and all kinds of critters, and he's the only one that was authorized on our shift to pack the M1 carbine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they didn't trust the Air Force guys with weapons. So I was kind of glad he was going with me. So we drove over there. We had an Army pickup, an old Dodge, well, those days, new 65 Dodge Power Wagon. Boy, fancy. We went over there, and it was ink black. There wasn't a moon out. There wasn't a star out. It was just ink black. And we get over to where we can see the radio towers, and the lights are on. So we come to the conclusion that must be something going on. Let's go check it out anyway. So we're this far. We went over, went in, checked everything out. And, of course, the sentry, all he can do is just sit with the truck. I come out and I go, power's fine. Everything looks fine. Nothing's, you know, what can you check? Everything looks good. And he's standing in front of the truck with the headlights on, smoking a cigarette. And I walk up to him and I say, well, let's go. And he says to me, do you ever get the feeling that if you turned on a light, there would be somebody standing in front of you? And I went, yeah, sometimes. He says, let's go. We went, got back in the truck, and as we're getting in the truck, I'm looking back at the radar site, and I knew I had left the lights on in my tower because I wanted to make sure that I could see my tower, the one there on the east end of the complex. And I could not see my lights in those windows. And it's only a mile of clear, open ground.
Yeah.
So we drive back. We go through the gate. We lock the gate. I look up. My lights are on in the tower.
Wow.
We lock up the truck in the garage, in the snow garage. We go back in. The operations sergeant comes out, and he says, you have to do something about that ground clutter. It just hit us again. I go in. I check it out. I don't see the ground clutter that he claims was there. Everything looks normal. I go back up to my tower, shaking my head. Now, several hours have passed. This wasn't minutes. This is several hours. I go back up to my tower. I'm standing there again, having a cup of coffee and cigarette, looking out the window, and I can see all the lights like normal over at the radio site. So I'm thinking to myself, what's going on? Why is everything going on and off and on and off? So the next morning, usually shift change took place in the little chow hall up there at the site. You know, the day guys would come on. Well, how'd it go last night and all this, you know? What? Nothing happened. Everything got some fluky power problems, but other than that, things are fine. Okay. Because we were a nuke site, everybody on that nuke site, as you walked in the door for duty, you picked a badge with your name on it off a board on the wall with hooks. You picked your badge up. That badge was a radon radiation meter. Everybody wore them. When you left shift, you hung it back up. The purpose was to make sure that when you were on shift, you didn't get exposed to radiation. They started out as a light blue, and as they got older, you know, sunlight or whatever might change them a little bit. But you got a new one every 30 days. My sergeant, my tech sergeant, section chief, he walks in, how'd it go last night? And I'm sitting there having a call. Oh, it's fine. You know, this thing's hanging on my pocket, you know, button on my pocket like it's supposed to. He takes one look at me, and he says, where were you last night? Did you go down to the nuke site? No, Sarge. He says, your badge is black.
Wow.
I went, what? Sure enough, I picked it up. It was black. If it hadn't been for that young Army sentry going with me, now he didn't carry one because he had never come in the building to pick his up. So his was still on the clipboard in the hallway. So I just picked him up. We went, we came back, and then when he came in, he put it on, I suppose. But he never got... So somewhere between point A and point B... Somewhere, I got it. Something happened. If it hadn't been for him backing up my story, there was a lot of people that were about ready to call me a liar and court-martial me.
Wow.
For the fact that I had gone down to the nuke site and somehow exposed myself to radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Which was not going to happen anyway because you couldn't get to the part that radiated. I mean, that was all locked up, but still. And then the second worry was it's leaking.
Yeah.
And they were all over that... Duke site down there, like you wouldn't believe. So
that's weird.
That's weird. I was the only one, nobody else.
And what's your theory about?
I drove underneath something.
Yeah.
There was something parked there in that little hole. You see that, like, between the radio site and the radar site, there's a saddle, and you can see that it's pretty deep saddle. I think something just come in and parked itself in there. They had previously in March probed the nukes at the missile site.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're probing the nukes at this site.
Yeah.
What is this?
So you're talking maybe a UFO.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
something happened that night. And they spent a lot of time looking around that nuke site, looking to see if something was leaking. They spent a lot of time around in the valley back and forth to see if something hadn't been placed there or parked there or what. But
if they would have found something, do you think they would have told you?
They wouldn't have told me. I was just a three-striper sergeant. What are they going to tell me for, you know?
Like, hey, we found this indentation with all this radioactive. It looked just like a flying saucer had landed right next to where you were. That was it. They wouldn't have even told you that, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
My daughter came up with an interesting theory about some of the stuff. She says, well, Dad, she says, if you were selected, what makes you think some of the other people on that site weren't selected for abilities?
Yeah.
And I had never thought about that. You know, you get in your own little world, you think you're the only guy that, you know. But then you got to thinking, because it was that Army private first class that had a weird, eerie feeling, mm-hmm. sensual, like if I turn the lights on, is something going to be standing here in front of me?
Right.
Because, you know, the old Dodge pickup, their headlights, you lucky to see down the end of the
block.
Those headlights back in those days, you know, so we weren't really looking out too far, and the best we had was those old GI green flashlights with a light bulb and two batteries, you know, and they were just a little bit less than the headlights, so, yeah.
Now, you said, you know, working with radar and things like that, did you ever get, like, readings of weird things on your radar, like, oh, there's something flying above us, or is it that kind of radar?
Yeah, it's the big, gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, that that building is three stories tall, and the dome above it is two stories tall, and an antenna filled the dome up.
You ever get weird things on it?
There was all kinds. My roommate was an operations sergeant, and sometimes he would just have one or too many beers and start talking, and I'd just listen. And, you know, there's not much to do when you're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, even, I hate to say this about poor Sundance, Wyoming, but the town is just out in the middle of nowhere. I
mm-hmm.
mean, there's nothing to do there,
you know,
even in those days, and there's even less now. But, so everybody was pretty close-knit, so you'd hear stories. But like I said, being in maintenance, I didn't really see what was going on the screen, because, if it wasn't broke, it wasn't none of my business.
Right. Any stories that you could share or no?
Well, there was one in the same year as 67. One of my classmates that I graduated with from the radar school, a guy by the name of Jimmy Jones, who the Air Force thought was my cousin. But anyway, that's another story. But he was stationed over in Wadena, Minnesota. And we would call back and forth on the Audubon lines and talk to each other once in a while. And because he knew my shift, he called me up and he says, are you guys seeing what we're seeing over here in Wadena? And he says, what? He says, well, you know, the college kids are all screaming and yelling for the last few nights about seeing lights in the sky and flying saucers and all this. And I go, well, I don't know. Let me go in the operations and see what they're doing. Thanks for the call. And operations was hopping.
Yeah,
they were hopping. They were tracking stuff, and they were moving. And I'm trying to look over people's shoulder, and I'm getting pushed out of the way. things were hopping that night there, and so I says, well, must be east of us, all over in that South Dakota, North Dakota, Wisconsin area over there. Because like I said, we could turn our radar on, and we could just shoot. In fact, that's how we found out that it was found out the distance of the moon from Earth was with the very same radar that we had.
Mm-hmm.
They had an Army captain who was a mathematic whiz who literally aimed the radar at the moon one night, pulled the trigger, and waited for the return signal and calculated the distance from where his radar site in Maine was to the moon that night. And the scientists thought, oh, gee, that's nifty. Let's do it again. So that was the big joke. No shooting the moon, gentlemen. You can play with the radar, but don't shoot the moon.
So from my military experience, I know that there's kind of the normal military, which is just the average guys. You know, they do their job every day. I mean, it's not much different than being a civilian, you know, other than it's a little bit more regimented. And then you kind of step over a line, and there's the secret guys, and there's the secret missions, and the secret bases, and the stuff that you can't talk about. And I didn't go very deep into that, but, you know, to this day, I don't talk about it simply because... You know, God knows what they might do, you know, and I'm not ready to disappear yet. So, what do you think? I mean, this is just an opinion. So what do you think the military does with all this secret information?
Well, this project was to do the feasibility studies to put an installation on the moon, a manned permanent on the moon. This was part of it. I find it very strange that I stepped into this world where I'm running into the same people all the time in 3.5 years that I was in the service that are in the active duty on this. Because, like I said, I ran into that Mr. Rose down in Florida at the base. I was stationed there in the same unit.
Yeah.
When I reported to the unit, well, I had a little trouble getting through the front gate because coming from a very lax, relaxed radar site environment.
Slipper wearing and...
Yeah, and belt buckles that don't match uniforms. And the code of the West was, if it's warm, wear it, kind of thing, you know. Then going right to a SAC base, the Strategic Air Command, who are notorious for strictness and rules and regulations and nuclear bombers and everything else. And this radar squadron I was being assigned to was located on that base. Funny enough, it was fenced off from the rest of the base. Kind of like they wanted to contain us. I don't know what the deal was there. So I had a little trouble getting on the base that first day because my ID card didn't match my stripes on my shirt. And my shoes didn't match my uniform. And my belt buckle was a silver belt buckle. It said Wyoming on it. But I was in uniform. I had my khakis on. So I got to meet my first sergeant for the first day. I was showed up on the new site, and sure enough, it was the same first sergeant I had in Wyoming. The very same man.
Wow.
He drove to the front gate, and he got out, and he goes, I knew it had to be one of my old boys. Come on.
Wow.
Got to straighten up. Yeah, so that, I don't know what they did with all the data. I know that when... satellites started doing the work, the surveillance. I mean, the Air Force dismantled this whole dew line and everything else real quickly.
Yeah.
Because it was very expensive to maintain. So they got rid of that stuff real quick. So, but that was pretty much my experiences there with these moon bases and how I got involved in that.
Now, do you think there's a race for China and Russia and us to do a moon base now, and if so, how come we didn't pursue it shortly after we first visited the moon?
We got told to get off.
By?
Haven't you ever heard that story?
No.
Well, no?
I don't know if I have or not. What story?
We landed on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And a few times, and the theory is that we got told, you're not ready for this. Get off the moon.
By something that was already on the moon? Okay.
By somebody or something.
Like, go away.
On the moon. You guys aren't technologically ready for this yet. The other conspiracy that I have ran into is, and that's written in in the Horizon, Project Horizon paperwork from 1959. If extraterrestrials exist, if what we're seeing is real, who are they going to align themselves with?
Right.
That was the big, and that was a legitimate fear. It's written right in the Horizon Project. That was one of the legitimate fears. If extraterrestrials exist, if these UFOs are real, and this, the secret documents were only released to the public, I think, a year ago. We don't want the Russians to be their buddies. And then the big theory was, well, if the extraterrestrials have a base that's close to Earth, where is it? It's on the dark side of the moon. Now, if the Chinese are building on the dark side of the moon, and, well, you can see where this could go if you're a conspiracy person. You could really get into this. But, yeah, and the big question is, why the dark side of the moon for the Chinese? I mean, you can't talk to Earth from over there without putting a satellite up above you as a relay station.
And not to mention it's extraordinarily cold there.
Yeah, and that makes you vulnerable, because to shut the Chinese down, all you got to do is take out their their lunar communications satellite, and they can't even talk to home because they're on the far side of the moon.
Yeah.
So, interesting. It's all. I think really what it is, it's time for us to go back to the moon, establish ourselves there, use our technology for our further space exploration. It's easier to launch to Mars from a zero gravity than it is from Earth. You know, we can make a larger ship. We can build it right there on the moon, possibly. I don't know what their plan is, but if you could build something on the moon that you could launch to Mars, you could make it bigger. That's for sure.
Yeah. What do you think the advantage of being on the dark side is, you know, other than being covert?
I can't think of one.
I can't either.
I can't either. I mean, you can't talk to the Earth. You can't see. You can't. I mean, it's all. They say there is a little light over there once in a while, but, you know, I have no idea why.
Yeah.
Unless they're looking for something that they got wind of that the rest of us aren't interested in or don't know about. But, yeah. That would be interesting to see what they come up with.
Well, we'd like to thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, Johnny, is that it for today?
Yep, we are out of time.
All right.
You want to wrap her up?
Well, I think that this has been a very interesting conversation with Mick Jones, and I would like to thank all of our listeners for being here. Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Alien, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.